and welcome to Trek This Out, Star Trek Review Podcast. And this week we'll be reviewing Disengage, Episode 2, Season 3 of Star Trek Picard. I'm joined by regular crew member Suki.
Hello.
New Ensign Deb.
Hey up.
And special guest star who gets the and cat.
Hi. From America.
Truly international podcast. So we're going to be talking about episode 2 of Star Trek Picard. So let's get your initial thoughts. Let's start with Kat.
I saw this coming from a mile off, but JLP is a daddy. Good old JL. Other thoughts?
Spoilers, straight away with the spoilers, you know, straight away with the spoilers.
It's a review show, right? So we assume it's going to be spoilery. Yeah, but it almost wasn't a spoiler because I think it's pretty obvious to everyone. But I liked it. It moved, except for Raffi's scenes. I found those I was kind of slogging through them. The writing for her character is so bad. I just feel like it is. They've given her this over-the-top personality, which is uniquely and especially and incredibly unsuitable for intelligence work. Intel people are really dispassionate, and she's completely the opposite of dispassionate.
Pause there, because the initial thoughts are usually quite brief, and I think we're getting down into detail a bit.
That's usually my thing.
You make them yes. Go on, go a bit with your brevity is the soul of wit. Go on, give us your initial thoughts.
Yeah, okay, so my brief comment is meh.
That's very brief.
Yes.
Well, Suki, can you beat that one?
I can't, because that was very, very, very well done there by Deb. I'm just thinking it was a decent, tense episode. On the Titan, but then the whole Raffi storyline, as Kat says, was a bit okay. I'm going to borrow Kat and Deb's thing. It was a bit meh. Go on, Andrew. What was your opinion?
So I've described it as a bit of a getting there episode. I feel like everything that was revealed was kind of signposted in episode one. It was kind of a bit of an exposition thing that need to happen. But I thought it was all right. I thought it was enjoyable. I like watching it. So, yeah, I thought it was all right. I don't know. I'm staying sober this week. For anyone who tuned in to last week's episode.
2 weeks ago, it was 2 weeks ago.
I was a little bit worse for wear, I'm going to be honest. So I've just got chocolate and Diet Coke this week, so I'm going to be very good. And sensible. Right, so we started touching on some of the detail. So shall we talk about the fact that we're all unshocked that Space Eggsy is being confirmed as being John Luke Jr. Sort of initial feelings on that, thoughts on... I don't think anyone's surprised.
Yes, nobody's surprised. We everybody sort of guessed straight away in the first episode when he suddenly appeared that he was Picard's son. But the fact that scene at the end, though, where Picard has eventually come to that same conclusion that he's his son, I just don't understand why it took him so long to get there. Riker knew, Will knew straight away, but Jean-Luc just was denying it all the way through. There were similarities, the way he spoke. I mean, straight away, the first scene that we see, he's there going around saying mon ami and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, that's a Picard saying that. I'm sure that's Picard. Or is that Q saying things like that to Picard?
Yeah. Well,
I knew initially, everybody knew that he was his son. But that scene right at the end, Beverly and Riker suddenly appearing on the bridge, and Picard realising just by looks that was his son.
I think that was kind of the issue, because he doesn't look like Tom Hardy. And you know, we've got a very close image of like Rascals and Tom Hardy as to what young Picard looks like. And I was really trying to think, does he look like Picasso? And I guess his nose, if I ignored all that other stuff, then I guess there's a bit of similarity. But yeah, I mean, Riker was definitely pushing it, unless he'd seen loads of Jean-Luc baby photographs.
I've got to be honest, and it's like, or just now it is confirmed that like what is kind of like age ranges and things. Like, no disrespect to that quite nice looking boy who was in Downton Abbey, but if he's 19, 20, he's had a really hard paper round. Like, I'm struggling more with the fact that he's meant to be 19 or 20. Like, he's clearly like 35. And I think that's probably made it feel a bit, I think they've cast someone who looks too old. I think that might, I think if he's meant to be sort of 19, 20 year old lad, he don't look like one.
Is he supposed to be a 19, 20 lad? I'm just thinking maybe Picard and Beverly had a relationship for a few years after TNG had finished. And then they've actually been missed. They've actually fallen apart in the last 20 odd years. Actually, I'm not sure now. You're right. 20 years. They says they haven't spoke.
They do say he's in his 20s.
Yeah, it's 20 years.
And on Twitter, Terry Matalas.
Metallus.
Huh?
Terry Metallus.
Yeah, Metallus was saying, yeah, okay, point taken, but just go with it because we really wanted him because he's a brilliant actor. And yeah, he's had a hard life, hasn't he? And then it's to emphasise the point, they keep calling him kid and boy. It's like they go with us, you know. We know he's looking older, but go with us. But he's had a tough life, and he had to go off to Hogwarts and need to grow up and get the English accent. So, he's had a tough life. He probably had a battle with Dumbledore and all sorts of things, or whatever the 24th century Dumbledore is.
Equivalent.
It's kind of weird how he looks like he's going to headbutt everybody. He always looks like, puts his head down and looks up through his non-existent fringe like he's going to charge them. And then when he did headbutt them, I thought, wait, you should have seen that. Oh, that's the next episode. Darn it.
Oh, it's this one, isn't it?
Yeah.
This episode, what if he headbutts the security guard? I mean, he takes him out with one headbutt as well. I'm just wondering if that's possible. But, you know, I'm not a medical person now. Andrea?
So I think the other kind of non-surprise really for me was that Worf is clearly Raffi's handler. I think if you're a fan, that was quite well signposted. I think even just kind of the language of those messages where it was screaming Worf at everybody. And he kind of, to me, the moment of the episode was Worf lopping off a Ferengi, like drug dealer's head with one swipe. I did quite enjoy it. And it was a bit of a like, yes, it's Worf. I wish we'd seen a little bit more of him in the episode, but it pretty much confirmed what we were thinking. And I think he looks great. I think out of everyone, like Michael Dorn looks like no time has passed, really. And I know he's got a little bit of help with prosthetics, but like, he looks and sounds great. It's like he's never been away for me. So that was nice, I think.
Mine now would say Silver Fox. As soon as he appeared, I put Silver Fox. Wow, here he comes. And it's a great entrance, comes in. And it's all blurry and Raffi's point of view. And then when he dispatches everybody in that room and picks her up and walks out, you just think, fantastic. Kat, you was going to say something.
Well, to go on Worf for a second, and then I want to get back to Jack for a second. It's too bad to me that they spoil Worf in the publicity. Because imagine what a great surprise that would have been. That would have been so like, oh, wow, you know. But in the publicity, they had him and they talked about him. And so that kind of blew that surprise, which was too bad. I'll have more to say about him on episode 3. As far as Jack goes, it was no surprise that he was Jean-Luc's son. But there's also this trope of, you know, the dutiful Starfleet officer has a rebellious son. People were pointing out the parallels with Wrath of Khan. And it's really obvious here that he's, you know, he's that rebellious guy. He's got to do all these these naughty things and be the pirate and all this kind of stuff. This is a not to do with Jack so much, but aren't Fenris Rangers supposed to be kind of good guys? Or what's the story with the Fenris Rangers? I don't understand that. But okay, that wasn't very organized, but
that's all right. The Fenris Rangers, aren't they supposed to be outside the Federation, Starfleet, so they can do basically what they want? So they've got their own little rules. And if they get these little side hustles, I'm sure they can just do whatever they want, basically. The war publicity bit, I think they had to go around telling everybody that he was back because the whole crew was going to be back. The whole crew, it would have been a great surprise, but the whole crew was back and he wasn't. They'd all be going, well, where's Michael Dorn? Why haven't you gone? And Michael Dorn would have been under so much pressure to just say, no, I'm not going to be there. I'm not going to be in it. But the chances are somebody would have already let the cat out of the bag, basically.
I think it's really hard to go into these things unspoiled. I think I managed it with one season of Doctor Who once, where I just didn't look. I just became a hermit for a few months and just didn't look on the internet. And to be honest, I am a bit of a like trailer, show me the trailer, I'm going to watch it 25 times. And I feel like I've got a little bit of a trailer checklist that I'm kind of working through. Like, oh, we've seen that. We haven't seen that yet. Oh, we haven't seen him yet. And I suppose because the characters in general aren't new to us, the people we know, we're going to kind of look for them, aren't we, I think. And I don't think there's any point trying to keep them overly secret, because I think it would get leaked anyway. So there's two sides. I think it would have been a lovely surprise if we hadn't known, but the chances of that happening in the internet age are getting slimmer and slimmer, I think.
I think we are still going to get guest stars we don't know about. That's the feeling. Suki.
I was going to say, today, it's not a Star Trek guest star, but we had somebody from Teddy Metalis' old show in this episode, which was like Aaron Stanford. Now, Aaron Stanford was the star of 12 Monkeys, but you wouldn't have recognised him in this episode because he was the Ferengi Sneed under all loads of makeup. And Teddy Metalis, I think, put out, or maybe Aaron Stanford himself, put out, I'm in tonight's Star Trek episode, can you recognise me? And you wouldn't have. But then you got another character actor who's not a Star Trek one, who's appearing in the next episode, but we'll talk about him when he appears next time. Deb's looking at me quizzically there.
Yeah, obviously I haven't done enough reading. I found an interesting fact. The art director, I think, or someone like that, pointed out that in the Elias ship, they had to remove the glass from the control panels because somebody sat on it twice.
Right. So who was the culprit?
I think we all know that it would have been a Riker bottom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Asserting his entitlement to the Titan. Yeah.
The number of pictures of him in Next Gen with him sat on a console, I think it's pretty likely.
That set, though, he didn't direct that episode, did he?
No, he was on the ship, wasn't he?
It's the next one he directs. Andrea?
I'm just going to defend Freaks a bit here, because those sets are far more flimsy, and I still maintain that me and Jason Isaacs basically smashed the Discovery chair and just didn't tell anybody. So
hold on. Smashed, as in smashed, what way smashed are we talking about?
Right, because
my mind's going somewhere really filthy.
And the plan was I was going to sit on his knee, but his handler wouldn't let me. And so he kind of sat us on the arm, but it's really wibbly wobbly. It's not what you think. It's like plasticky and a bit shit, to be honest. And I'm sure it was making crunching noises. And like, I was like, let's never speak of this again. Like, do this. It was like wobbling and stuff. I was like, can you hang on to me, please? Because I'm going to fall over. So the sets are not as robust as I would have expected or imagined. So they are easily breakable. So I'm going to stick it up for Freaks there and say these sets are not, like, built to last.
The just going back to Jack, he's like, he's supposed to be like some sort of lovable rogue, right? He's supposed to be there helping various planets, but yeah. At the same time, he's also helping himself, I assume, to whatever he can. But he's there turning up on planets, giving them medical supplies, and at the same time, he's also selling weapons and Romulan ale and just making a profit that way.
I think he's not making a profit, that, you know, for himself. He's trading, which is a bit dodgy, but so that he can get medicine. That's what Beverly was knocking it back a bit. But the weapons were bribes and for trade.
I shouldn't have called him a pirate. I'm sorry.
Well, thing with pirates, actually, I was kind of a bit disappointed that Shaw suddenly got a bit soft. Because you have this idea that, you know, oh, Captain Shaw is awful. Captain Shaw is a really, a nasty captain, you know. And it just reminded me of Our Flag Means Death. You know, you've got Blackbeard coming and he's going to be really nasty and horrible. And then the next, you know, in a few episodes, he's going to be off going on jazz appreciation weekends with Riker and going off with Picard to learn about wine tasting etiquette. He does seem to have mellowed quite quickly.
I like Shaw as a character. I really like him. He's kind of, the initial sort of, yeah, he's a bit of a prat, but actually he's probably got a point. I think we've seen a little bit more of that development about who he actually is, rather than just someone who's got the back to the wall being confronted with a situation they do not want to be in. I quite like him as a character, and I kind of am looking forward to having a little bit more to do. I think I quite enjoyed that.
I agree with you. He's the first episode, he comes across a bit in your face, but then when you realise he's actually trying to look after his crew, and he doesn't really want to be listening to old farts, basically coming onto his airship and telling him what to do, what not to do. He doesn't want to listen to him. This is the way he wants to protect his crew. It also takes Seven to make him understand that there's other bigger things at stake. And if he doesn't help Picard and Riker, right, he will also end up losing his reputation to a certain degree. But at the same time, I can also understand him thinking to himself, but I don't really want to help these pair because I'm going to put my crew in jeopardy. But he still does it. So he's a character that's, in my opinion, is a genuine character, in that he definitely knows what he has to do, but he doesn't really want to do it because he knows he could get himself into trouble, his crew into trouble, and he's in a dilemma, a very big dilemma, Deb.
Well, he is right, and he's right that, you know, 500 crew for two old farts that have been pretty stupid. You know, it's just the thing about insisting Seven uses her Borg name. You know, there's definitely, I think you said last time that maybe he's had history with the Borg. But you kind of think, he heard that Riker and Picard were coming, and he thought, I know what I'll do. I'll diss Jazz. I'll tell him his wine's crap because I prefer Malbec, and I'll start eating without them and call them sort of big heads, and that'll be brilliant. And then I'll put them in bunk beds. That's awesome. And then they're still there, and he's thought, damn, what do I do next? You know, he's got all this really prepared, you know, way of dissing them, and then they sort of, you know, get stuck somewhere and nearly killed. But he was right. He should have just gone off and left them, really. But it would have been a pretty boring and short series.
Yeah, I think you all hit almost all the points. But there were some people who were talking about how he deadnamed Seven. And I was kind of like, yeah, she might have grounds for an EEO complaint or something. But she, you know, as far as his treatment of her, she has been insubordinate, and she does deserve to be confined to quarters. I was in the Coast Guard, so I know a little bit about military discipline, and believe it or not, was disrespectful and rude to Picard and Riker when they came aboard. But I think he had reason for that too, as supposed. He probably has had previous exposure to the Borg, and that's probably why he's been a little nasty with Seven as well, and doesn't like to use that name for her. Yeah, so if these two retired old guys, as you said, Suki, had come aboard my ship, I would have been like, nope, not going to forego my assigned duties, boring as they are, to endanger my crew for you two. What would Spock have said? Really? The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the two.
But they, right at the end, when he then when he hears Picard, well, what, just after the scene with Picard and Beverly communicate just with their eyes, and they realise they've actually got a child together, and then so when Picard then goes Admiral's orders, basically relay that order and change. He could have also then could have said something there, but he doesn't. As soon as he realises what the reason is, he realises that he can't go around giving up somebody's child to be killed off. If it had been somebody who wasn't a member of his crew and wasn't a member of his crew's family, he probably said, yep, just go. But because he was somebody's crew, a member of the crew's family, he probably thought, no, I can't really do this. Andrea?
It doesn't feel very Starfleet to, like, be willing to turf someone over to unknown pirates for unknown horrors to happen to them just because, and going, oh, well, he's somebody who's in Starfleet, so I'll change my mind. Like, it doesn't feel a particularly Starfleet value. It's either you do that or you don't. But it's quite an odd one, isn't it? Because you would think based on that kind of moral code that it would be like, well, we don't do that. We don't hand people over. If he needs a trial, he has a trial, but we don't just turn him over to bounty hunters. So it was a bit of an interesting change of heart, I think.
I thought it would have been really interesting if Shaw had turned him over. And then we watch as Jack finds his way to get off that ship. That would have made Jack a stronger character. As he is, he's kind of a pawn. And that bothers me. If we're supposed to, you know, like and admire this character, he's gone and got everybody in trouble. You know, that's about what Jack has done so far. So I don't know. I kind of see it differently, but it would have been interesting.
I think we've naturally kind of come to sort of the villains of the piece, really. And I think there was some extra special scenery chewing going on there. And I like my villains like over the top and camp. Like, I'm a rapid fan. Like, that is what I want. So I'm quite happy with that. So I don't know how other people kind of found it. Is it Vadic?
I loved her appearance straight on the screen, and she's there basically chewing the scenery and loving what she's saying to these guys and really toying with them, especially when she knows she's got a more powerful ship and that she could just basically blast them out of sight if she wanted to. But and that she's just egging the pudding, basically just drip feeding all the threats to them, and then just giving her all. And we all know who she is, the actress. I mean, Christopher Plummer's daughter. So there's all this history as well, Star Trek history, with the actress as well. So I'm just loving the character and the actress in this role.
I mean, I don't have a particular theory, but they know a lot about a lot of people. You know, not just your kind of main players, but like they've got so like they seem to have a fact file on pretty much everyone they're encountering. So you kind of think, well, what? How do you know that? Which makes me think, if you know who Shaw is there a Starfleet connection there? Or I don't know why some random aliens would necessarily know him, who's quite recently become the captain of the Titan. Like, who they've never had dealings with before. So I suppose that was the only thing that kind of pinged up. And I thought, well, how do you know so much about all this Starfleet personnel unless you've had something to do with them in some capacity? So that was the only thing that I thought was quite interesting, because I thought, like, why would you know that randomly? Unless you know the captain of every ship that's ever kind of flitted around the galaxy, it seemed like encyclopedic type knowledge. Like, it was like Star Trek nerd level of like knowing about captains of ships, and it was like, is there a reason for that? So that was my kind of little takeaway from some of those interactions as well.
Quick Google, that's all. Yeah.
Quick Google, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. For next week it will be. But you're new Trek anyway. You're not proper Trek.
Oh God. Let's not go there. Wow.
The some of the special effects, I'm just going to point out, especially with the Badich and her ship, where she goes around, pulls what was the Ilios, and just grabs it and just throws it at the Titan. Superb special effect, something we've never seen before.
I said she was very villainous to do that. That was really bad.
Well, she also telegraphed, this is a sign of my power, right? And I can basically do what I'm telling you to do. You've got an hour, otherwise you will get similar attacks of this sort of nature. So this is me. This is my power. This is my ship. Please do as I say. Whether she actually follows through after they would have given Jack over. I mean, she might have just decided, I need Jack, but I don't need the rest of you, and destroy the ship. That would make a really super villain then.
So I think the other kind of thread was kind of you saw Raffi basically choosing a mission and Starfleet over find a family and like possible reconciliation with her son. And I don't know, I know not everyone enjoys that, but I feel really invested in her story, and I think I have been throughout Picard, and I think she was one of the standout characters for me, who I've kind of really bought into, and I'm pleased, like, didn't, like, get cut when they had, like, a massive call at the end of the last season. And I think they've kind of continued that out, and I do, I find her story quite, I'm quite emotionally invested, so I think they've developed her over the three seasons really well, and I hope she gets a satisfactory arc. I think is where I'm going with that, because she is quite tragic in a lot of ways.
I think, was it Kat, I think might have said, she's whoever's decided to choose Raffi for this sort of mission, with all her past baggage of her being a former drug user and being away from Starfleet for many, many years. It's just a strange thing for somebody to be asked to be on that covert mission. And I just think, yeah, it's great performance that she's playing, but to be putting her into that sort of situation, I think, is just a bit strange. And I mean, we all know Worf's the handler, and I just don't think he would have maybe done that. Maybe somebody else made the decision for him to use Raffi as his helper in this mission.
I was just going to say, though, I think in some ways it's a bad thing, but in other ways it's kind of like, I can think of a lot of very Starfleet characters who would really stick out in those environments and would be like as awkward as sort of Kirk et al, like wandering around like Los Angeles in 1980, whatever, you know, double dumbass on you type conversations. She has kind of moved in those worlds and understands how it works. And I think maybe if you've never been involved in that or seen that, you would probably be really obviously like a plant and not belong. So I can see why they would put someone like that in the deep cover there, because they know how that needs to look and how it kind of remain unseen.
Yeah, I want to clarify that I like Raffi. I love Raffi. I just think that at points she's very badly written, and it's hard to differentiate that, I guess. But I see your point about her getting around in the underworld, and what I'm saying is that she can play a role. Raffi, the character, can play the role of a drug-seeking person or whatever. But what you see when she's not on, you know, what you see of her when she's not in her secret, super secret squirrel mode. She's getting so angry and all this. And I can see why, because Rafi's a passionate person. But it just, to me, is an illogical fit in the spy. You know, if we've all seen Jean Le Carré and his spies and how they're colder natured than Rafi. And I worry about her.
Yeah, you're right, because you see most spies are cold, calculated, know what they're doing, got everything planned in advance and will. But Rafi, she's getting worked up and she's getting more and more passionate about this thing. But at the same time, she's being, she's actually going to get caught. And this is what happens, basically, because she overplays her hand, thinking that she will be able to do this. And it doesn't work because Sneed has already guessed that she's a spy. So yeah. Maybe if Andrew was saying, look, she knows how to interact in this world, but she hasn't been there in that sort of world for about 10, 15 years because she's sort of dropped out and trying to get back in. And she's immediately, she's the first interaction she has with the big bad of the big bad of her in that scenario. She's caught straight away.
I was going to say, I kind of hope Worf's going to be part of that redemptive arc, because I think Worf's experienced loss, hasn't he? And he's kind of been through it a bit, and he's been an angry character, and I'm really hoping that relationship's going to be developed, and that he's going to have quite a good role there. I think that's quite a good pairing. I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
I'd like to see how them pair go forward now that she knows who her handler is as well. But I just want to go back to a meeting with her ex's name, Jay, and she has this conversation about her son, how he's doing, and he rips into her, but she's still trying to make the decision that she's got to find all the perpetrator is of the terrorist act. She's got to find that. And that she does that at the detriment of meeting up with her own son, or having the opportunity to meet with her son and having some sort of redemption with her son. Maybe a bit later on in the season, there might be that Jay character might come back and they will be able to reconcile. But at the moment, I just thought she might not have wanted that sort of dilemma being there, but she's had to make the decision for the greater good rather than for her own personal life. Like,
yeah, I was just gonna say her her ex-husband, what a bastard. I was just like, really? Are you really gonna make her choose? You know, why don't you just tell her what she needs to know and say, and we'll talk about getting together with, you know, our son. But God, he's just like, no, I'll even let you know how to get to Sneed, or I'll tell you where our son is, but not both. You know, like, it's just like on a playground or something.
I'm thinking who's the daddy reveal? We've had a drug-related fight. This is starting to feel like an episode of Jerry Springer. are we about ready for our final thoughts? That point in the show.
Yep.
Oh, thank God. Jack is disliked by fathers of daughters all over the galaxy. Otherwise, how would we know he's a real man? He's standing up to the Fenris Rangers enough to convince us. I mean, they had to throw that line in. I'm just, why? Why? And while I'm on why... Why does Jerry Ryan talk at the bottom of her voice? I guess it's a thing she developed for Seven. I don't know, but it's it doesn't allow her a lot of expression, but I guess that's the point of it. I liked Amanda Plummer's performance as Batic. She's better written than the usual over-the-top villain. I liked her amusement. That's not, you know, she's not a mustache twirling villain, as it were, but she means business, and being a shrike is a good way to get it done. But she seems amused at the whole idea a performative villainy, you know, like it's sort of meta. And she not only has a terrible hairstyle, but she has a very weird concept of time. Like it's all the same in the Sol system. You're all on the same time. I also wanted to say that the trombones, I am just up to here with trombones, you know, like every time the ship comes on screen. Can we just come up with another musical cue? I don't know, like da, 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 know, something. Benny Hill, no.
That would be good.
So, and I want to say a good thing. I like Riker a lot more in this series than I ever did when he was in TNG. This is Riker, I think, of like First Contact, where I first kind of really liked the character a lot. And I like him now. He's got more humor, closer to the surface. But then he's also able to be the pissed off captain. You know, if there's one thing, one place I don't like to be in this galaxy, that's on my back foot. So you don't start talking. I was like, yeah. Yeah, go, man. I love Captain Shaw. I'm just going to say that. I know he's not supposed to be lovable, but he's been hurt. So that's an appeal to me. As far as the dark, dim interiors that a lot of people were complaining about, Terry Metalis said that he said this on Twitter, I think, that there was a problem with saturation on the first two episodes, having to do with the streaming of them, you know, the mechanics that I totally don't understand. But there was something about that. The saturation was too intense. So that's why it was so dark. It's better later. It gets better. There's a point of grammar that I have. Intergalactic versus intragalactic. I think the word they're looking for is interplanetary. They always say intergalactic, and it's not two galaxies, you know? It's not. Intragalactic is inside the galaxy. Anyway, I see Deb has had her finger up.
No, carry on. I'm just now humming. What was it? Interplanet. Doesn't that have a both? The Carpenter's song.
I can't afford music fees on this. Oh, I'll start singing.
Right. Oh, that's okay. No, I was only going to say, we were saying last time that, oh no, let's hope they don't make Jack Picard's son because it was too obvious. And when the reveal happened with just the looking, part of me went, oh. And then part of me went, wow, wasn't that amazingly done?
The yes. Silent reveal.
Someone posted on Twitter a comparison of the first time Picard sees Beverly on the Enterprise D in season one, like the first episode. They posted that scene side by side with the scene that we saw in episode two. And it was remarkably similar, except, you know, Riker wasn't there in the early scene. But and her acting and Patrick Stewart's acting were fantastic, just fantastic in this scene in episode two. Oh my God, I just was like, wow, beautifully done. I predict that Shaw will have lost someone very dear at Wolf 359.
Right, I think that's probably enough of what we think. Let's get over to you and find out what our listeners thought of episode two. Listeners feedback. Okay, so we've got the Sirens of Audio on Twitter at Audio Sirens. Sorry, missed this yesterday. I would have said great acting from Gates McFadden. She rarely got things to do, but really shone in this. Seven was wonderful, and the interplay between Picard and Riker made my heart glad. Looking forward to seeing where this is going.
I'll do the next one, which is Drew, and he says, continuing where the last episode left off, episode two keeps up the quality, nice tension-filled episode. good reveals of the handler and Jack's parentage, liked Captain Shaw softening from the villain he was, roll on the next episode. Make it so. Thank you for that, Joe.
Sarah and Steve Davis of the Davis Wire. Feedback for episode 2. We have to wait until Friday evenings to watch new Star Trek eps and really look forward to starting the weekend this way. In the past, this has sometimes been a bit of a damp squib, but not this week. Was it a bit OTT and a close relation of Panto? Yes. Did I love it anyway? Yes. I liked the way the story moved on, but still left lots of questions. I found Jack Crusher a bit much, but wonder if they're aiming for early Kelvin Kirk. Also, surely Picard would have known that he'd slept with Beverly just prior to her disappearing. Did he just think he was a bad lay? On the whole, a great episode, which I really enjoyed. 4 out of 5 lights.
I did put a comment down saying, a bad lay. Good grief, Sarah.
Just the one above that, Dave K. I love that you thought that my season 6, episode 4 gag was a reference to relics, but it was actually a reference to the Borg virus, adding 3 to every number.
Oh,
we'll that was my era. That I think I was. I thought, well, yeah, I can see relics, like, you know, dragging the old ones out from the past. So it worked on many levels.
We'll have more from Dave a bit later on. We'll crack on with Tom Turlow, and he says, a solid second episode. Things haven't gone to hell in a handcart quite yet. The revelation that Picard has a son, assuming he actually does have a son and there isn't a plot twist yet to come, seemed fairly obvious, but added emotional depth to the episode. My general disdain and apathy for anything involving Raffi continues, but it was cool to see Worf turn up as a handler. That's increased my interest in this plot strand by about 1,000% already. Christopher Plummer's daughter wasn't aiming for subtle as the villain. Nice to see the captain of the Titan isn't a complete twat. Maybe he'll warm up as the series progresses, assuming he survives. I'm still a bit wary about where this is all heading, having been stung by previous series, but it all looks promising. 3.5 lights out of 5. Cheers for that, Tom.
So I've got Jack McMorrow, who says, please indulge me. I help produce 2 wrestling podcasts, so Carney is my second language. If season 3 were a wrestling angle, Captain Shaw would be the heel who the fans can't help but begrudgingly admire. His acting again is very on point, and so is the writing. I personally despise the dead name and bastard. He does it again this week. But not only do I look forward to seeing him heal out, but as I said, for the next generation, introducing a new character in the last season outside of Ezri Dax rarely gifts us sheer brilliance, but so far, performance-wise, he does. Speaking of last season, additions strangely working, Jack Crusher, obviously named after me. I think we have a modern Han Solo or Mal Reynolds on our hands. Just oozes charisma, and while not exactly flashy, his near effortless escape from the Titan, a brig, is just endemic of this. Was Worf's return supposed to be a surprise? I think if we hadn't seen him in the trailers, to once again use a wrestling term, to see him return as the some badass he was in 1987 to 2002 would have caused a huge earth-shattering pop. Enjoyed his return immensely and look forward to more, but it could have been absolute brilliance. That scene of the reunion between Picard, Riker and Dr. Crusher, not a word between them, but through wordless exchanges in a visual medium are incredibly easy to screw up. It's a testament that they don't go anywhere near mistake territory. I need to wake up early every Friday to watch the new Picard before leaving for work. Now, I absolutely love getting my all-important sleep, but so far, season 3 is more than worth missing out on it. Overall, I give Disengage 3.5 Jack Crushers out of 5, with the asterisk this might go up when it comes to a full season rewatch.
Oh, I see Bruce Wayne on my screen right now. Is that okay?
Yeah, do Bruce Wayne.
Okay. Episode 2. Disengage is possibly the worst titled episode of Trek yet, as disengaging as is the last thing that it was. Perhaps he could have gone with Chang's little honey bunny of death, or how to get ahead with a batleth at the Emporium of Doom. What a great episode, picking up the pace after episode 1. On the one side, Captain Rodback Shaw showing he might be a captain after all, and the exciting news that Jean Shagalong Luke is more like Kirk than he'd like, leaving unknown prodigy deposited around the galaxy. I do have problems trusting the seemingly old before his time Jack Crusher, though I'm not sure whether that's because he will be forever the most detestable thief, scumbag, and rapist of all, Stephen Bonnet in Outlander. Vadic seems a delightful piece of work, but I do think they missed a trick that she didn't come on the viewing screen to shout, "Any of you fucking pricks move and I'll execute every last motherfucking one of you." But I'm guessing that might affect the ratings. The second strand, of course, is Rafi, Section 31, and a Ferengi that goes on a rapid diet at the hands of everyone's number one Klingon. Now, that would, of course, be a good idea for launching the seemingly forever stalled Section 31 spinoff. Make it into a Worf show. All in all, an enjoyable romp with good cliffhangers making you desperate for the next episode. Come on, Jeff, just get on with it for feck's sake. For me, 5 lights from 5, that one.
Wow. Really getting into that one there, Kat. Andrea.
I was just going to say, until I was trying to think where I knew Amanda Plummer from, and until I read Bruce's review, and then it like clicked in, it was like, oh my God, Pulp Fiction. I don't think I would have got there on my own, so thanks for that, Bruce.
Oh, she was in Pulp Fiction. How about that?
Yeah, that's the Honey Bunny reference. You know, the ones that hold up the diner? That's her.
Yes. Yes, now that you mentioned, yes.
You were from somewhere, I would never have got there. So I appreciate Bruce helping me out with that one.
So I've got Dave Kay again. It's hard to put into words how I'm feeling about Picard at the moment. On one level, I'm quite enjoying it. There's plenty of cool spaceships and adventure and excitement and really wild things happening. But there's a problem, which isn't the fault of Picard per se, but Picard Season 3 is perhaps the straw which broke this camel's back. And this is why I'm just over this style of season-long story. I miss episodes having a neat self-contained plot, even if they fit into a bigger arc. I'm just tired of mysteries being dangled for no other reason than to get social media excited for a week. I'm tired of big revelations which come from nowhere and make no sense because we need unearned wow moments. All that said, Jack Crusher, if that is who he is a great character. I'm still not solid on Shaw. He's no Jellicoe or Pressman or Nekogiv. I'll keep watching, but I'm yearning for a new series of Strange New Worlds.
Dave doesn't seem to be enjoying Picard that much. It's a pity. We've got Darren Pickles. I think this is our last piece of feedback before the audio. Darren Pickles says, it was another good episode after last week's great opening episode. It was great to see Worf back and still kicking ass. The big revelation about Jack Crusher being Picard's son was a bit obvious after the first episode. So it wasn't the dramatic moment for me that they played it as on the episode. It was funny listening to last week's episode of the podcast with your predictions about it not being Picard's son, knowing that they had already revealed it in episode 2. Amanda Plummer was superb as Vadic. I loved the way she mockingly says Jean-Luc Picard and knew all about him being synthetic. Roll on this week's episode. Cheers for that, Darren. As I says, there's a bit of audio feedback, and that's from Steve.
Hello, I'm Stephen Hatcher, and I run the Hoover's Doctor Who group and the Hooverville Convention, so I suppose I'm mainly considered to be a Doctor Who fan by those who know me, but I've been a Star Trek fan since the summer of 1969 when the original series first appeared on British television. Okay, well, Star Trek Picard, Season 3, Episode 2, Disengage. This one takes up where last week left off, following two apparently unrelated stories, which we can feel sure will come together before very many weeks. We have Picard and Riker having illegally commandeered the Titan and found Beverly and Jack Crusher on the Ilios, with Beverly injured and in a stasis pod, and they're under imminent danger from an unidentified but heavily armed ship with no hope of deliverance. We see a rather angry Captain Shaw persuaded by Seven to come to the rescue, but he then throws Jack into the brig, convinced he's a crook and a con man. Then in the other plot strand, we have Raffi. Having failed to stop the terrorist attack on the Starfleet recruitment building, ignoring the orders from her unseen superior to stand down and abandon her investigation, tracking down the Ferengi gangster Sneed, who allegedly provided the arms for the attack. But when you describe it like that, it doesn't sound as if an awful lot happens in the episode. Indeed, my first reaction on watching it was, well, I enjoyed that, but it didn't move things on very far. On reflection, and on a second viewing, that's not entirely fair. In fact, rather a lot happens. For a start, we get to know Jack Crusher a little better. On the surface, he appears to be something of a rogue and a chancer, but his actions suggest he is a bit more than that. In the end, he's prepared to sacrifice himself to save his mother. So, credit to him for that. There's something about him that reminds Will Riker of someone he knows quite well. He's Beverly's son, but who's his father? Jean-Luc seems rather reticent on the whole matter. We get, too, to know Captain Liam Shaw a little better. His attitude to Seven is quite reprehensible. Is there something in his past behind his refusal to allow her to go by her preferred Borg name? He's also quite prepared to hand Jack over to the bounty hunters, which is not the sort of thing that a Starfleet captain does. However, it's clear he's not opposing Picard through obstinacy or spite. He's concerned for the safety of his crew. Despite the dangers involved, he does rescue the party from the stolen shuttle, and when Picard finally assumes command and overrides the captain's orders, after spending almost an eternity staring wordlessly at the revived Beverly, Shaw does not resist. He gives way to the inevitable with a resigned, "Whatever happens next, Admiral, that's on you." For me, the moment of the episode comes next, as without any comment, Picard reassuringly pats Shaw on the shoulder in an almost fatherly gesture, as if to say to him and to us, "Jean-Luc is in charge, it's going to be okay now." In passing, we should note the dreadful lack of security in Starship Briggs. The ease with which Jack is able to escape is frankly embarrassing. Surely the most rudimentary of searches would have uncovered the handy little device on his wrist that he uses to break down the force field. One has to feel rather sorry for the security man who's put in the unenviable position of having to guard him. That's not a duty to volunteer for, that one. Our outstanding new character this episode is the bounty hunter Captain Vadik, a humanoid female who is menacingly calm, cold and utterly ruthless in her pursuit of Jack Crusher. She gives Shaw an hour to hand him over, then casually uses her advanced weapons to throw the Ilios at the Titan just to reinforce her point. I'm hoping we see plenty more of Vadik in the weeks to come. This is an interesting character. Meanwhile, Raffi doesn't believe the official story about the terrorist attack, that it was carried out by the dissident Romulan T'Loko. To arrange a meeting with the Romulan fixer, Sneed, she goes to meet her ex-partner, from whom we learn that about her fractured relationship with him and their son, and her history of drug use. Now, it's a good job we found out about that particular little thing, or else the significance of Sneed's forcing her to take drugs in order to prove who she is would have escaped us entirely. That's rather clumsy plotting here, to be honest, but I suppose it's forgivable. Sneed's through the professional intelligence agent Raffi's ruse with more embarrassing ease, and the whole place erupts in a big punch-up as a battle-wielding fan favourite joins the party to much cheering in this house. How lovely. So, we leave things with Picard in command of a starship in the company of Seven, Will, Riker and Beverly, and Jack Crusher, hiding in a nebula playing submarine warfare, and Raffi being carried to safety by a big friendly Klingon. Do you get the impression that these two stories might collide sooner rather than later?
So, I think it's that time in the show where we give the episode our lights out of five.
How many lights, you see?
Four lights!
I asked how many lights you see.
Was to kick us off. Kat, what are your lights out of five for the episode?
I think three. I gave the first episode like two lights out of five because I was not real happy with it. But this episode is starting to find its chops, so I'm liking it. So I gave it 3 out of 5.
Deb?
A 3, yeah, because It was like a filler episode. You knew that a lot was going to happen in the next episode, and oh gosh, I'm psychic. It did.
Okay, what's your like this one?
I am going to go with 3.5. 3.5. As Deb just says, there was a lot of stuff in this episode, which is we'd already predicted last week. Picard's son, Worf being the handler, and all sorts of stuff that we sort of predicted last week. Anyway, it is a bit of a filler episode. So, yeah, 3.5. What's yours, Andrea?
I'm a 3.5 as well.
3.5.
I enjoyed it. I suppose we're now at that point of the show because there are four of us. We need to nominate our red shirt of the week.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt.
I feel Deb is already enthusiastically gesturing, so I think she's busting a gut to nominate someone. So who's it going to be, Deb?
Sophie, because Leicester lost, Newcastle lost, and Liverpool won by a bit.
A bit? A bit? What do you mean a bit? Who's 7-0? A bit?
I'm just a bit pissed and jealous. So, Suki for supporting Liverpool.
Well, I'm gonna nominate Deb because yes, they did win 7-0, but they beat Manchester United 7-0. Nobody likes Manchester United, so I'm nominating Deb in retaliation because, like, even though Jurgen Klopp kind of annoys me with his teeth and his whinging, but no,
there's nothing wrong with
Watching Roy Keane want to cry on Sky was worth every second. So I'm gonna defend Sookie on that one.
That was fun, but it could have been 6-0.
So hold on, we've had two votes so far, and it's nothing to do with the podcast, but it's all to do with football that was played the last few days.
Yeah,
right. So Kat, try and pick somebody, and with a reason about the podcast instead of football.
I was going to nominate myself for being so technically challenged.
Don't worry, I was going to go there, so don't worry about that vote.
Yeah, who would I nominate other than that? Gosh, I have a hard time with this. I don't know. Who would I nominate?
Suki.
Yeah, Deb, just for suggesting Suki.
Superb. Superb. Right. So, I'm not going to say anything now because I'm just going to vote for Deb because she just sort of ripped into me about Liverpool and I don't understand why. I've always been very supportive of Leicester, but all of a sudden she rips into me for about Liverpool. So, it's going to be Deb. So, that's three votes there, young lady.
Yeah, well, we beat Southampton 9-0. The first proper team. All right, okay. Well, how am I gonna die?
You're gonna be put in a drawer at the Daystrom Institute and stolen later on.
Spoilers.
Yeah,
that could be fun.
I'd say you're gonna be, oh, I can't say this because it would be a spoiler. Never mind.
No, you can do, carry on.
No, we've got another nomination coming up.
Yeah, okay.
Because of course we're not recording this all on one day, are we?
No.
Okay. So Deb, I think you're going to be examined and treated by that doctor who's not Beverly.
Oh, Jack.
No, the woman.
Yeah, I know. I was just being hopeful.
Boy, she was really a piece of work.
We'll leave that till next episode then.
Yeah.
So we have reviewed the episode, we've heard your feedback, we've given our lights out of 5, and we have nominated the red shirt. So that's all from us. So it's goodbye from me and goodbye from everyone.
Bye. 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 Bye.